From the Edwin B. Johnson Newsroom, WHAB presents Paying Attention with Tom Duggan and Paul Murano. To express your views, call 978-374-1900. That's 978-374-1900.
The following program is closed captioned for the thinking impaired.
You think he's gone? He's not gone! That's the whole point! He's never gone!
Is this some radical new therapy?
You see?
By the powers vested in me, by the Federal Communications Commission, I command you to get on the microphone in a serious manner and continue this broadcast.
To start, press any key. Where's the any key?
Welcome. You've got mail.
Well, I must have not been paying attention when you were just talking to me.
I don't hear myself.
There I am. It's driving me out of my mind. Everything drives me out of my mind these days. No Paul today. No George Papoulias today. Maybe not George Papoulias in like 2 years. No Timmy Bowmill. I love Timmy Bowmill. We got to get him over here. Ba, 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 ba. 978-374-1900, 978-374-1900, a little late, stuck in 93 traffic, 95 traffic, and 495 traffic. I have no idea how that happened. Here's the Paying Attention radio program here on WHAV, WHAV.net, WHAV.TV. AM radio 1640. We're on cable access TV in Andover, channel 8, Haverhill, channel 22. In Methuen, we're on channel 8 and channel 22. In Plastow and Sandown, New Hampshire, we're on channel 17. Here on WHAV's Paying Attention radio program. What a week this has been. The people have spoken. People have spoken here in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. The people have spoken across the United States of America. And what a great day for America it was on Tuesday. Here in the United States... losing my voice, huh? I've been screaming all day. Here in the United States of America, it was such a great day on Tuesday. We had elections all over the country for governors, state representatives, state senators, Congress, U.S. Senate. We had all over, in every state, you had some kind of an election going on. And what a great country we live in, where we can change power. We can change people who represent us in our representative government in this democratic republic that we have here, this constitutional republic we have here in the United States. And there was no violence. There were no riots. There was no military intervention. We were allowed, unlike almost every other country in the world, we were allowed to go to the polls and privately vote for who we wanted to represent us. And we were pretty well behaved, I thought. I mean, watching the national news and watching what was going on in Wisconsin and California and Alaska, there were very hotly contested races. There's actually one race still in Alaska still to be decided. And yet what we didn't see is what we see in Africa. What we didn't see is what we see in the Middle East. What we didn't see is what we see in other countries around the world, which is either no participation or mandatory 100% participation, where people are forced to vote. But, of course, everybody knows who they're voting for, so they have to vote for the people in power. Here in the United States, we have a secret ballot. And people all over the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, all over the Merrimack Valley, as well as the country, went out and decided who it was they wanted to represent them in their state legislators, for their governors, etc. And I just think it was a great day for America, no matter who you supported, whether you're a Democrat or Republican, whether you're an independent, whether you're one of those sissy socialists, whoever it is that you supported and whatever party you belong to or don't belong to, I want to congratulate all of you. 978-374-1900 is the phone number. I'm a little surprised. In fact, I'm more than a little surprised. I have to tell you, this election in Massachusetts took me by surprise. You know, during the Scott Brown election, those who have been listening to this program for a long time, during the Scott Brown election, I just refused to believe Scott Brown could win. Because in previous elections, I got sucked in. I got sucked in with Kerry Healy. I got sucked in with a number of other Republican candidates, and I wanted to believe they were going to win. And I started to believe because I wanted to believe. And I'm sure a lot of people out there know exactly what I'm talking about. I wanted to believe so bad that they were going to win that I started to believe that they were going to win. So when Scott Brown's election happened in January, I said, you know what? They're not getting me this time. They're not sucking me in. I don't believe for one second Massachusetts is going to replace Ted Kennedy with a Republican. I just don't believe it. As badly as I wanted to believe it, I just couldn't bring myself. It's like Lucy with the football, right, Tim? Like Lucy with the football on Charlie Brown. Okay, Charlie Brown, this time I'm really going to let you kick the football. And at the very last second, she pulls it away and he falls on his back. That's how I felt like in January. And then when Scott Brown won, I started to think maybe the tide is turning in Massachusetts. Maybe this is the end of one-party rule in Massachusetts. I mean, up until Election Day this week, you had the Democrats controlled the majority of the House of Representatives in Massachusetts. You had the Democrats controlled the majority of the Senate. In fact, I think there's only four senators that were Republican in Massachusetts. You had a Democrat who was governor, a Democrat lieutenant governor, a Democrat auditor, a Democrat treasurer, all the way down the line, Democrat, 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 Democrat. And I went to the convention this year, the Republican convention in Worcester, and I watched Charlie Baker, and I was mesmerized. I said, here's a guy who's from corporate America who gets it. Here's a guy who's good-looking, he speaks well, he's got a good-looking family, he's got a great message. He understands what Massachusetts needs. And they sucked me in again. I got all wrapped up in the emotion, as I'm sure many people out there who supported Democrats that didn't win, who supported Republicans that didn't win, they sucked me in again. So I came in here on Tuesday night, and Tim was nice enough to ask me to come in and help Jack Bevilacqua to give WHAV decision.
And you did a great job. Thank you.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I appreciate that, because I was kind of doing it off the top of my head, so I was hoping people liked it, but not really sure. And I came in to help Jack Bevilacqua, and the first thing that I heard when I walked in was Jack was calling the election for Deval Patrick, like right out of the gate. I hadn't even sat down, and he was saying it was over. I just couldn't believe it. My brain would not allow me to accept that early that it was already over. That Deval Patrick, for all of his faults, of which they are many, and we've talked about most of them, that the voters of Massachusetts decided, yeah, we want four more years of this. And I'm not going to pretend to understand the voters of Massachusetts tonight. Believe me, I'm not, because I still don't understand the voters of Massachusetts. But by halfway through our election coverage, it really became apparent to me that Jack Bevilacqua was right. That Deval Patrick was going to be governor for the next 4 years. That Deval Patrick, after giving Willie Lantigua $35 million, after having his administration and finance director, Jay Gonzalez, fudge the books of the city of Lawrence's finances, after trying to implement the candy tax and putting transponders in people's cars so the government's always going to... You know, where were the liberals? Where were the tennis lilies of the world? Where were these people who are afraid of the government and the one world order, the new world order? Where were those people when Deval Patrick was talking about putting transponders mandatory in every car so the government knows where you are at all times? Where were they come Election Day? Where were they during this campaign?
couldn't help but hear that. I don't remember that.
So yeah.
Maybe there's something about the media, if that's something true.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, the media never, I don't think, the mainstream media never came out with a 9/11 conspiracy that the Jews took down the towers. But that certainly ran like crazy through the left wing of America. And so you look at the candy tax and the alcohol tax and the taxes upon taxes upon taxes. The small businesses fleeing Massachusetts, and I didn't believe it, and I was wrong. And it doesn't happen a lot, but when I am wrong, I don't mind saying that I'm wrong, because I think what's wrong with society today, I think what's wrong with people today, is that nobody wants to say that they were wrong. Everyone wants to justify their position that they had when they were wrong, but no one wants to admit that they were. So I was wrong. And not only was I wrong about Charlie Baker, but I was willing to bet up until election night, up until even when the election numbers were coming in, I was willing to bet everything that I owned and future earnings that Karen Pulido was going to be the next state treasurer. That Mary Connaughton was going to be the next state auditor. Susan Bump didn't even campaign. Like, I never saw, ever, Suzanne Bump. I've never met her. Now, I've met almost every candidate for every constitutional office because of my job at the Valley Patriot. And by the way, the Valley Patriot will be out on Monday for the November edition. But, I mean, I go to all of these events, folks. I go to all the fundraisers. I go to all of the rallies. I go to as many of them as I can. I met Guy Glotis, who didn't even make the primary. Came to Lawrence, went to Sal's Riverwalk. I met Steve Grossman. I met almost every single candidate for every single constitutional office statewide. They either came to Lawrence or Haverhill or Methuen, and we went down and we covered the event. We took pictures, talked to them, got audio from them. Never once did I see Suzanne Bump. Ever. Not once. And yet, she didn't campaign. She really didn't spend any money. I mean, she had TV commercials toward the end, but she really didn't spend much money. Karen Pulido was everywhere. Mary Connaughton was everywhere. And at the end of the day, it didn't matter. Because here in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, if you look at the election map, if you look at who won what towns, if you look at where Deval Patrick was the strongest, if you look at where Charlie Baker, what communities Charlie Baker took, it was very obvious. I talked about this with Jack Bevilacqua the other night. It becomes very obvious exactly what's going on electorally. The cities that get all of the state grants, all the federal grants, all the free needle exchange programs, all the AIDS houses, all the homeless shelters, all the after-school programs, all of the social programs that government spends money on goes into the cities. And because they go into the cities, you have hacks and hack Democrats mostly, who get appointed to these political jobs to run these programs. And who do they hire? They hire other hack Democrats. And they've created a dependency in the city of Lawrence. And I know because I lived in the city of Lawrence for almost 40 years of my life. They create a dependency in the cities so that you will always, if you live in the city of Lawrence and you are getting some kind of public assistance, you will always vote Democrat, because the minute those Democrats aren't in power anymore, that paycheck might be gone. That Section 8 housing might be gone. That welfare check may be gone. That EBT card might be gone. That free needle exchange program might be gone. So those who are in the wagon, getting the free ride in Lawrence, in Lowell, in Worcester, in Holyoke, of course they're going to vote Democrat. Those who are paying the freight, however, who live in North Andover and Groveland and Boxford and Chelmsford, well, they're not interested in getting free stuff from the government. They're not interested in a free handout. They're interested in, I don't know, putting food on their own table. They're interested in doing their own work and keeping a little bit more of their own money. So, of course, they voted Republican. They voted for somebody who was going to lower their taxes, stimulate the economy, and allow them, if they owned a small business like I do, to hire people. Herein lies the genius of 40B, and we're going to talk about that when we come back from the break. Question two is whether or not we should do away with a law in Massachusetts called 40B, because it's Massachusetts General Law Chapter 40B, which mandates that communities have to have at least 10% low-income housing. And if they don't, the government's going to force them to have low-income housing. When we come back, I'm going to tell you, and I don't think anybody's ever done this, but I'm going to tell you how the two correlate. When you look at the election numbers and you look at what they're doing with 40B, it's going to be apparently clear to you when we come back why it is that Deval Patrick and the Democrats desperately want public housing in Georgetown and Groveland and Chelmsford and North Andover. You're listening to the Paying Attention radio program here on WHAV. A little late today. We're going to be going till 9 o'clock. We have Vincent A.J. Arachetti coming by. We have former Lawrence Planning Director Mike Sweeney's coming by. And, oh, if only this were true, and I'm hoping that it is, Al DiNuccio, Willie Lantigua's new best friend, is going to be calling in at some point at 978-374-1900 here on WHAV. We're catching the wave.
Ray DeFiore, listen to the Tom Duggan Show, because if you're not paying attention, you're part of the problem.
I love to smoke. I smoke 7,000 packs a day, okay? And I am never quitting. I don't care how many laws they make. What's the law now? You can only smoke in your apartment, under a blanket with all the lights out? Is that the rule now, huh? The cops are outside. We know you have the cigarettes. Come out of the house with the cigarettes above your head. You'll never get me, copper. I'm never coming out, see? I got a cigarette machine right here in my bedroom. Yeah, yeah.
Won't be trite.
Two trailer park girls go round the outside, round the outside, round the outside. Two trailer park girls go round the outside, round the outside, round the outside.
Guess who's back, 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 guess who's back.
Much to the chagrin of many. 978-374-1900. A little out of breath going into that first break. You just pod that down just a little bit. That's good. Excellent. No Paul Morano today. We were supposed to be on yesterday, but because of the election, we had... Paul Morano was supposed to be here, but he had to teach a class tonight. We were supposed to be here last night, but because of the election, we got bumped, and Tim had an event over at the Chamber of Commerce. By the way, Tim, how was that Chamber of Commerce event? A lot of businesses there. It was the Merrimack Valley Chamber of Commerce at DeBarra's, right?
It was very well attended. You know, one thing, I don't know what your thoughts are about chambers. I know Jack, your counterpart on Monday night, doesn't think much of them.
Yeah, I don't either.
But the Joe Bevilacqua manages somehow to pull out a crowd every time. Everything is an event. And, of course, it's good for him because it doesn't cost him anything.
Right.
They collect at the door while the sponsors pay for everything. But he pulls together a crowd, whether or not it's the crowd that you want to see is another matter.
Well, you know, it's interesting because for at least the six and a half years, the Valley Patriot newspaper has been in existence. Bill Carpenter, who, by the way, is a really good guy, has been trying to get us to join the Chamber of Commerce. And initially they sent me a packet. And I said, send me a packet. I don't know if we can afford it this year, but maybe next year. Send me the packet. We'll give it a look. So I started looking through the packet from the Chamber of Commerce, and the Eagle Tribune was like on every other page. It was like this event sponsored by the Tribune and that contest sponsored. I was like, yeah, I'm going to join that organization. Like, that's the organization I want to be involved in, where the Tribune is like, they're the poster boys for the organization. Just forget that.
Well, that's how the chambers raise money. They go to the... You know, it's funny. I make this comment frequently, and I don't know what the solution is, and I don't think it's a left or a right solution. But as the big chain stores grow and the big national organizations grow, now maybe this is going to start sounding left, but what happens is lots of these little local businesses disappear.
Mm-hmm.
So you have left a handful of banks, the Tribune, and a few other media maybe, and... only the ones with the big bucks can play.
Right, yeah. So, you know, a couple of years later, Bill Carpenter, and I even ran into Joe Bevilacqua.
Will, I believe.
What's that?
It's Will Carpenter,
what did
I
say?
Believe.
What did I say, Bill?
Bill.
Okay, Will Carpenter.
It's not short for William.
Okay. Oh, well, I didn't know that. See, you learn something new every day here at WHAV. Just stay tuned. It's like being in college all the time. So Joe Bevilacqua a couple of times asked me to get involved, and I started complaining about their involvement with the Tribune, and they said, well, why don't you just come on? But look, you can get some advertising. Look at all the members that we have. So I thought, you know, maybe we will join the Chamber of Commerce. And then I actually went to a couple of mixers. And really, this is no reflection on Will Carpenter at all. Maybe a little bit on Joe. But it really seemed like a mutual masturbation society where, I mean, they just get up and everybody gives everybody an award. Like, every event is everyone gets an award. It's like being on the T-ball team in Farm League when you were a kid where they don't keep score and everybody gets a trophy. And it was just kind of like, yeah, you know, first of all, none of these people are going to advertise with my newspaper because they're all advertising with the Trib. They're all on board with the Trib. Lawrence General Hospital's not going to advertise with us because we write stories about what they do when they do stupid stuff. You know, Holy Family Hospital, they're not going to join with us. You know, when there's something stupid going on over at the Holy Family and they do something wrong, we write about it. The Tribune doesn't. Which is why they're in bed with the Tribune and they're not in bed with us, which is okay. And by the way, that doesn't make me angry. I don't take it personal. I understand that there are people who like the Red Sox and people who like the Yankees. And people who like the Yankees, if you're a Red Sox fan, don't take it personal. They like their team. So if you're Holy Family or Lawrence General or one of these organizations that's in with the Chamber and in with the Tribune, look, you've picked your team and that's okay. It's just not my team. And I'm not gonna water down my players by merging with, you know, doing business with the Chamber. So, you know, I know that it serves a function for a lot of small businesses, and I certainly don't want to discourage anybody from joining the Chamber. I think it certainly can help you if you have a small business. It just, my small business happens to be a little different. We don't really follow the same mold. We don't follow the same business plan as anybody. And I think that's one of the reasons why after 6.5 years, we continue to grow at more than 30% every year while other businesses are still struggling to survive. 978-374-1900. So before the break, we were talking about the electoral map. And we were talking about the 40B, which is the mandatory government-sanctioned, government-forced low-income housing numbers for each community in the Commonwealth. And what 40B basically says is if you live in North Andover, if you live in Boxford, if you live in Groveland, and you don't have at least 10% of your housing stock set aside for low-income housing, well, the state's going to tell you any new housing that is built, any new housing units that get built, any new condo developments that get built, a certain percentage of that has to be set aside for low-income housing. Now, on the surface of that, that sounds good. And if you're a liberal, you're sitting there going, yeah, well, what's wrong with that? Low-income people need a place to live. That's true. They do need a place to live. But look at what happens to a community when you force low-income housing into that community. Let's take North Andover, for example, because that's where I happen to live. In North Andover, if they were going to build a housing complex or a condo complex, under 40B, the developer would have to go in and put in, I think it's 10% or more, of the housing stock that they built has to be set aside for low-income housing. And by the way, who are low-income people? Who are they? Who are the people who are considered, quote, low-income? They're people who are poor, correct, otherwise they wouldn't be called low-income. But they're also people who are in public assistance. They're also people who commit the most crimes in our society. They're the people who are the most drains on our public resources. They're the people who are taking from. And I'm not, by the way, I'm not casting a value judgment on anybody who's poor. I'm just saying, overall, when you look at the people who are poor, look at Lawrence, look at Lowell, look at Havel, the people who are in the poor neighborhoods of those cities, that's where most of the crime is, correct? I mean, I'm just stating a fact. I don't want anybody getting mad at me, sending me an email saying I'm racist or anti-poor people or anything like that. But the bottom line is we have to call it like it is on this program, which is, by the way, why we're here, because at the other station that I was at when I called it like it is, they didn't like it. You look at Lowell. You look at some of the really high crime-ridden neighborhoods in Lowell. You're not driving through neighborhoods with $500,000 homes. You're just not. You're driving through neighborhoods where houses are packed together, 3- and 4-decker homes. We've got 2 and 3 families per apartment. And again, maybe not their fault. Poverty generally isn't people's fault. But here's what 40B does. Here's what this low-income housing debacle does. A, It waters down a community that doesn't have a lot of low-income housing. Andover, North Andover. You look at the North Andover numbers at election time. I'm going to pull all this together for you. You look at the North Andover election numbers. Dave Teresi, the state representative, who's a Democrat, who sold out to Willie Lantigua in Lawrence because part of his district is in Lawrence. He lost his hometown. His hometown that he grew up in and went to the high school and went to college. I think he went to Brooks in North Andover. His dad, Mr. Teresi, by all accounts, Democrat, Republican, Independent, anybody that you talk to thinks Dave Teresi's father is one of the nicest guys you're ever going to want to meet. In fact, I still have people say to me, I voted for Dave because I like his dad. Totally understandable. But he lost his hometown. Why? A, he's a Democrat. B, he went along with raising taxes. C, he went along with a $35 million bailout loan for Willie Lantigua in Lawrence. And this was a Republican year. So North Andover went Republican. Now let me ask you this. If next year 1,000 units of low-income housing goes into North Andover because of this 40B, this low-income housing law that Deval Patrick and the Democrats have forced down our throats, the next election cycle, do you think Dave Teresi is going to lose North Andover? No, he's not. He's not. Because when they build that 1,000 low-income housing units, those people are on public assistance. Those people are committing more crimes. By the way, an additional burden on the schools, an additional burden on the sewer system, an additional burden on all public services. And on top of it all, when they go to the polls, they're voting for the liberals is going to give them more free stuff. And it waters down those Republican enclaves in Georgetown, Groveland, North Andover, Andover. So this, don't let Deval Patrick, don't let the Democrats fool you for a minute into thinking that 40B is about helping poor people. It's not about helping poor people. Don't let them fool you for a minute into thinking that 40B is all about helping people have housing. Because it's not about helping people have housing. It's about diluting votes at election time so they can stay in power. And if you don't believe me, go to Google, find one of the maps of Massachusetts and look at the blue and the red. And look at where the Republican communities and the Democrat communities are. And then think to yourself, if all of those communities with Charlie Baker won had 1,000 more people in low-income housing in the next election, that red's going to be blue, isn't it? That's why they want 40B. 978-374-1900. Hopefully we're going to have Michael Sweeney here very shortly. Former planning director for the city of Lawrence. I got tons of clips. Willie Lantigua losing his mind at a city council meeting Monday night. You are not going to believe what you're about to hear. Back after this on WHAB, Catching the Wave.
It's 7:01.
I love to smoke. I smoke 7,000 packs a day, okay? And I am never quitting. I don't care how many laws they make. What's the law now? You can only smoke in your apartment, under a blanket with all the lights out? Is that the rule now, huh? The cops are outside. We know you're having cigarettes. Come out of the house with the cigarettes above your head. You'll never get me, copper. I'm never coming out, see? I got a cigarette machine right here in my bedroom. Yeah, see ya!
I just need to be loved. That's all. You can just pull that down so it's like just behind me. They can barely hear it. That's perfect. There we go. Get all this on-air production stuff done. I have literally been going since 6 o'clock this morning. I went from my Chelmsford office straight to here. No lunch, no dinner, just for you. My radio listeners, my internet listeners, listeners on Methuen Cable Access Channel 8 and Channel 22, on Comcast and on Verizon Fios on Channel 32, access to Super Voters, which is I really like. It's actually one of the reasons I decided to come to WHAV. Really miss Paul today. I'm going to tell you why we miss Paul. Because I've got some great audio of Willie Lantigua flipping out on Monday at a meeting.
My neighbors.
And Griselle Silva, boy, I don't know. I don't even know what to say. I really don't. We really need Paul in here for this. We're going to do it without Paul, but we might do it again next week. Just because I need Paul in here for this. I don't even know where to start. As you heard on the news, Willie Lantigua, the chief, the mayor of the city of Lawrence, he was in court yesterday. And I know that there's a lot of criticism. Look, people who don't like someone are always looking for a reason to criticize, and they're always willing to jump on something that maybe if you sat back and you thought about it, might not seem as nefarious as you think it is. I feel bad for Deputy Chief Melix Bonilla. Deputy Police Chief Melix Bonilla. I'm not happy about how he got to the job of Deputy Chief. I'm not happy with some of the things going on in the police department. But I like Melix as a person. Always have. He worked with my dad. He worked with Uncle Frankie. I like him as a person. I don't like his politics. I don't like the way some of the things going on at the station. However, and I'm not saying that to inoculate myself. I'm saying it because, you know, people are not single-dimensional. So when I found out that Melix's son had been arrested because he was trying to rob a drug dealer, and he was trying to steal their drugs and allegedly pistol-whipped this guy, and that he was arrested at Lawrence High School this week, actually, I think late last week, I felt bad for Melix, because you want to know something? Yeah, sometimes kids go bad because they have bad parents. But you want to know something? Sometimes kids go bad no matter how good the parents are. And we don't know what the case is of Melix Bonilla. We don't know if he was the greatest father in the world and this kid went his own way anyway. Or if he was the worst father in the world and that's the reason. We just don't know. And I don't think it's right. I know I've read some of the stuff on some of the blogs. And I know I've heard people say what's wrong with the father. It's the father's fault. I just want people to step back a little bit just for a second and not do that. Because you just don't know. I have friends who are some of the greatest parents. I wish I could be as good a parent as they are. I really do. And their kids still screwed up. Their kids still either used drugs or were caught drunk driving and did stupid things. Good kids screw up too. This wasn't a screw-up, though, by the way. This wasn't something like where, you know, he was at a party, had too much to drink, got behind the wheel of a car, but he's basically a good kid. This was a kid who went out, and again, no reflection on Melix Bonilla, please. As much as politically people may want to. Because he's connected to Willie, because he's political, as much as you want to, please step back. I'm asking you, and this is coming from me, so that should mean something. Please step back. Melix Bonilla's son, not Melix Bonilla, chose to use a gun in the commission of a crime, chose to be illegally in possession of a gun, chose to be involved in a home invasion and a pistol whipping in Lawrence, chose to be involved in trying to steal someone's drugs. Now, whether he was the ringleader or he was just going along, he was there and he did it, as far as we know, from the police reports and from everybody that we've talked to. But when he came up in court, I really do understand why Melix Bonilla would be there for his son. And by the way, I think that makes him a good father. I do. I think that makes him a good father. Because there's a lot of parents who would say, hey, kid, you screwed up? Fend for yourself. You didn't want to listen to me. You didn't want to listen to my upbringing. Go to court by yourself. Fend for yourself. You're on your own. Melix Bonilla did not do that. So my hat off to Melix Bonilla, and my heart goes out to him, his wife, his family. It's not an easy thing to go through. However, Melix Bonilla was not there alone supporting his son. Willie Lantigua, the mayor of the city of Lawrence, was also there to support Melix Bonilla's son. State Representative, my good friend, Marco Stavers, a sitting state representative, was there to show support for this pistol-whipping, gun-toting, home-invading drug thief. And, by the way, the personnel director, I don't know why the personnel director, Frank Bonet, why the personnel director who should be, I mean, it's not like Lawrence has problems, right? Like he needs to go to work and get stuff done. The personnel director for the city of Lawrence was also there. And, again, it's not like Lawrence has economic problems. Patrick Blanchett, the economic development director, was sitting in the courtroom to show support for Melix Bonilla's son. Outrageous. Where are the law enforcement officials? You know, here's the thing. Again, you give Melix a free pass. That's his son. Maybe you even might want to give Willie Lantigua a free pass, because maybe he was there not to support the son, but to support his friend Melix, and Melix is going through a tough time because it's Melix's son. Okay, look, let's just for the sake of argument give him that benefit of doubt. The economic development director has to be there. The personnel director for the city of Lawrence has to be there. My understanding is Charlie Boddy, the city attorney, was there. That there were multiple city workers who should have been working for the city of Lawrence. You, the taxpayers. And by the way, you, the state taxpayers, because the state taxpayers are paying the freight. You would think that with all of the problems that Lawrence has, the economic development director would have been at work, not in court. That the personnel director would have been in work, not in court. He's been held on, young Bonilla has been held on, I don't know his first name, I apologize. He's been held on $10,000 cash bail. And my, again? Another break? All right.
Well, the news ran pretty long.
Okay, so he's been held on $10,000 cash bail. And from the police officers that I spoke with, he was cooperative when they arrested him. And it seems as though he may not have been the person who committed most of the crimes that were involved that night. I don't know, because I wasn't there. Actually, I was there. I just can't say that I was there. But it seems as though he wasn't the worst of the group that he was with. But here's what I just don't understand. You have a sitting mayor, a sitting state rep, all of these people sitting in the courtroom. Does this not smack as though they're trolling for favors from the court? When you have that many very high-profile people who are very well-known, a mayor, a state rep, an economic development director, a guy from the school committee, all sitting in court with this criminal, alleged criminal, he hasn't been convicted yet, but alleged criminal, it smacks to the court officers, to the judges, as though they're trolling for special favors. Like, this isn't a regular criminal. This is a good kid who made a mistake. He's connected. I just think that that's wrong. Sound is ready. Okay, but we're taking a break, though, you said, right? We'll take a break, because Tim wants to take a break. We'll come back. I've got clips of something else, but I definitely wanted to address the Melix Bonilla thing. I'm not, anybody who listens to the show, reads the Valley Patriot, reads my Facebook page, reads valleypatriot.com, knows I don't cut Willie Lantigua slack on anything. He doesn't deserve it. But on this, I'm certainly willing to give Melix slack. I'm almost ready to give even Willie Lantigua a little slack. But why did he allow, and why were other police officers, by the way, who were involved in chasing this kid in the courtroom showing him support? Because their boss is the father of the guy they locked up. Now, were they there because they wanted to be, or were they there because they had to be? I'll leave that up to you. 978-374. 978-374-1900 is the phone number. Here on WHAV, we're catching the wave. When we come back, Willie Lantigua freaks out at a meeting on Monday. Back after this.
This is Ann Coulter, author of Slander, Liberal Lies About the American Right. You're listening to Paying Attention.
Thank you.
978-374-1900. If you'd like to advertise on the Paying Attention Radio program, you want to call give Tim Coco. I so badly want to call him Timmy. I have like three friends named Tim, and I call them Timmy all the time.
We'll see how friendly you become.
Right,
we'll
see. We'll see how this friendship develops.
A very small group of people who get away with that, but we'll try.
But you might want to give Tim Coco a call at 978-374-1900 during the week. And talk to him about advertising on the Paying Attention Radio program. And we will leave your advertisements in the podcast if you want to advertise on this program. And we're going to be putting together some crossover ad packages for those who want to advertise on HAV and in the Valley Patriot. People who are already advertising in the Valley Patriot that might want to pick up some advertising on WHAV. We're going to have a great discount package for you. There's Martine and the girls. We should just play music the rest of the show. Like, why even be here, right? I think this is ready for you, Tim. Ode to Joy. Sorry. Yeah, folder A. It should be called Thickenworth. All right, let me catch my breath here. These breaks are so short. Oh, boy. I'm hoping that Paula and Penny, who are out at a wine tasting tonight, pick up some food for me when they get back to the house. Unless somebody wants to bring us a pizza or something. 978-374-1900 is the number. On Monday, you can kill that if you want. On Monday, in the city of Lawrence, boy, let me tell you, Grisel Silva, who always acting of professionalism, she is a city councilor in the city of Lawrence. If you are a frequent listener to this program, you know all about Grisel Silva. We have covered her extensively on this program. Some of the interviews could win awards that we've done with Grisel Silva. And as the weeks draw on with our new audience here at WHAV, we will revisit some of those. But I was watching a city council meeting on Monday night, and here's what she did. Now, I don't know if she had help with this or if she did this on her own. But, boy, did she pull one over on Willie Lantigua this week in the city of Lawrence. She decided she was going to have a candlelight vigil for the victims of crime in the city. And she was going to have this candlelight vigil across the street from City Hall 1 hour before a city council of the whole meeting where they were going to discuss crime, police protection, and a curfew in the city of Lawrence. By the way, I think it's a fantastic idea. When I sat on the school committee back in the 90s, I proposed a curfew for the city of Lawrence and spent 3 years fighting for a curfew in the city of Lawrence. It never went anywhere. Grisel Silva was able to get at least 100 or more people outside City Hall on the Lawrence Common, people who are victims of crime. And they held this candlelight vigil in the names of those who either lost their lives to murder in the city of Lawrence, of which there are many. Not as many as Lowell, but there are many. And people who are victims of assault and people who have been victims of home invasions. And when they were done their little rally, she invited them all to come next door to the city council meeting where Police Chief John Romero, Willie Lantigua, and a captain from the state police were present. And they began to talk, they began to the meeting and they asked for public participation as they always do. So each person got 2.5 minutes to get up and speak at public participation. Now there were at least a half a dozen people who spoke. I'm going to play at least three of them, so that you understand the atmosphere that was in this room before Willie Lantigua got up to speak. Now, when Willie walked in, you could see, and we all know the arrogance of Mayor Lantigua. He walks into the room, he sees Latino faces, he thinks, this is my crowd. He thinks, I own this room. And in 9,999 times out of 1,000, he's right. And that's the reason why he thinks that. But on this instance, this was not his crowd. He completely misjudged the room. And you could see his uncomfortableness as he was fidgeting in his chair while people were speaking. This wasn't the first person who spoke, but I'm going to play a clip for you now of a woman whose son was murdered in Lawrence a few months ago. And think about Willie Lantigua sitting in the front row listening to this as he continues his mantra of it's not my fault, it's Mike Sullivan's fault, $24.5 million deficit, people are being mean to me, people are blaming me for other stuff. And what these victims basically said was, we don't care. We don't care if you inherited a deficit. We don't care whose fault it is. We want to know, what are you going to do now? And when you listen to the Willie clips later, you'll see that Willie refused to do that. And then you'll see the mayhem that ensued, that they had to actually stop the meeting because he was screaming at the top of his lungs. And he was being called out of order, and he refused to be in order. Here's the first clip. This woman lost her son in the city of Lawrence. By the way, Michael Plant was on the show last week. He said that the majority of the city councilors have stated that Lawrence does not have a crime problem. I think this woman disagrees.
I'm here tonight to tell each of you exactly how the public safety cuts made in the city have impacted me, my family, my neighbors, and our future here in the city of Lawrence. I'm here because of my children. I have an obligation as a parent to protect them and to speak out on their behalf. The first and foremost purpose of government is to keep the people safe. The government of Lawrence has failed to fulfill its basic obligation to protect the people, but I'm not going to stand by and fail to protect my children and keep them safe. My family moved here over 20 years ago, and I moved with them. But I chose to stay here after college. I fell in love with this city, the people that I met through my jobs working in the city, my neighbors, and the various members of the many civic organizations I chose to become involved with over the past 20 years. When my husband and I got married, we chose to buy our first house here to make it our home. We've chosen to stay and raise our family here, thanks to the educational opportunity the Community Day Charter Public School offered our children and the rich diversity of people in the city that we are proud to call our friends. All that came to a screeching halt early Sunday morning after hearing gunshots at 4:30 a.m. for the third time in 8 days in my neighborhood, outside my bedroom windows. The bloodshed is now figuratively and literally spilling out into the residential neighborhoods. 30 yards from my house, gunshots are ringing out, and people are being shot. My husband and I erected a fence around our yard this summer with the hopes that our children could play safely outside between the constant flow of the drug dealers from New Hampshire and Maine on our street and now the random gun violence. I am now too afraid to even allow them to do that. Last night, while my husband stayed home for trick-or-treaters, I took our children to another neighborhood for trick-or-treating because ours can no longer be considered safe. Our taxes, and they are paid in full, pay the salaries and the health insurance benefits for each and every one of you. You were elected to represent me and my family, and I demand that you start doing just that. Eliminate your pay and perks, and put your money where your mouths are, and put it back into the police force that we need to restore order on our city streets. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Now that was Martha Leavitt. I guess I cut the wrong clip on that, but that was Martha Leavitt, who lives right off of East Haverhill Street, which is a beautiful neighborhood if you drive through it. If you drive by Hallinan Street, you drive by East Haverhill Street in Lawrence, some beautiful homes, a really nice neighborhoods by the Partham School. But last week, twice last weekend, there was a shooting in a very nice neighborhood, or what was once considered a very nice neighborhood. And she's got young children that she is legitimately worried about. What is she to do? Here's another clip. This is Lee Fickenworth. She's actually, by the way, a very loyal listener to this program, so I was a little surprised to see her get up there. She had a very difficult time toward the beginning. Her son has been murdered. Her son was murdered on Exeter Street last year in South Lawrence by the old Store 24. I think it's called Tedeschi's now. And yes, he was involved in gang violence, but he was 18 years old and he was shot down. By the way, this is something she didn't tell you. He was shot down execution style in front of her, in front of their home on Exeter Street. A neighborhood that I played with Derek Donahue my whole life. I played with Derek Donahue. I played with Kevin Callahan. I played with all of my friends. I grew up on Boxford Street about six blocks away. We walked through that neighborhood almost every day. We walked to the stadium. We went to the movies. And Lee Fickenworth came outside her house one day, and a car pulled up, and they executed her son in front of her. And she held her son as he died. And do you know how many detectives there are working on her son's case right now? One. The same detective who's working on all of the open murder cases in Lawrence right now because Willie LaAntigua has decimated the police department. Let's hear, in her own words, what Lee Fickenworth, this is the one called Fickenworth that I just gave you. Let's hear what Lee Fickenworth had to say at the city council meeting Monday night.
My name is Lee Fickenworth, and I'm a long time, lifelong resident of Lawrence, Massachusetts. I'm here because I have nowhere else to go for answers. My son, Gabriel, died on June 28, 2009. In his murder investigation, as well as others, has been put on hold due to budget cuts within this Lawrence Police Department. One minute I had an officer assigned to my son's case. The next minute I was told he was put back on patrol. And no longer will he be into the case until he gets promoted back to his original position. I tried to call to pass on new information, and all I can do is leave a message. But I don't know if anything is being done about it. Regardless of what anyone thinks of my son's lifestyle, he's still my son. And these killers are still on the streets. They're out there. My kids. I'm never going to have grandchildren with my son. Never. And these kids are out there having children. I know this for a fact. Something needs to be done. I'm tired of this. I've waited 16 months. I'm sorry that I'm a little bit upset. But I have every right to be upset. My son was 18 years old. How would you like if you're 18 years old and you have to sit there for 16 months waiting for them to pick somebody up? One person. And I'm not blaming you guys, but something needs to be done. And it's not just me. It's all the people behind my son's case or happened afterwards. It was 9 murders last year. There's 5 or 6 this year. And who knows how many before that. I have lost count. Please help us. We need help. One day I saw 5 police cruisers, like the woman before me spoke, 5 police cruisers at one incident on Myrtle Street. Why does it have to be 5 at 9 o'clock in the morning? I don't understand it. Thank you.
Now just imagine. Your son is gunned down in front of you. Middle of the daytime, too, by the way, I believe. Your son is gunned down in front of you, and you have to call a police station and leave a message with the detectives division to try and find out what's going on with your son's murder investigation. You've got one detective working on the case. By the way, when it first happened, I believe there were 3 detectives working on that case before Willie LaAntigua cut police officers. So Willie LaAntigua is sitting there, and victim after victim gets up and speaks at this meeting and talks about how they lost their son. It wasn't just Lee Fickenworth. I've got other clips. I just haven't gotten them to Tim yet. And it's just habit. I'm sorry. And Willie LaAntigua is sitting there with Police Chief John Romero, whom he tried to fire and wanted to fire, whom he said during the campaign did a terrible job as police chief. Who he said during the campaign fudged the crime numbers to make things look worse in the city than what they were. Or better than what they were. I don't know if he was saying they were better or worse. But accused John Romero of fudging the crime numbers. And so now Willie LaAntigua was starting to, I think at this point, starting to get the hint, this is probably not his crowd. So he gets up after a number of other speakers spoke. And talked about the crime in their neighborhood, the home invasions in their neighborhood. And by the way, neighborhoods that were not usually known in Lawrence for crime problems. I mean, we all know that the Hancock Projects, the Beacon Projects, Park and Hampshire Street, South Union Street. We know that the whole city of Lawrence isn't under a crime wave. We know that it's pockets within the city that give the rest of the city a bad name. But now it's spilling over into other areas. It's spilling over into Mount Vernon. It's spilling out over into Prospect Hill, onto the tops of Tower Hill. It's on East Haverhill Street and Hallinan Street. Twice last week on Hallinan Street, there were gunshots. So Willie Lantigua gets up and he starts. This will be the Lantigua clip when we get to it. And I'm not going to play the whole clip for you because it's 16 minutes long. But I'm going to give you the gist of what he said before the clip we're about to play. He gets up, and you know what? He started so well. Again, I'm an admitted critic of Willie Lantigua, but he got up at the beginning and he started well. He said he felt bad about the people who had been killed or lost a family member. He gave his condolences to the family, which I thought was classier than we're used to with Willie, but maybe he's starting to grow into his own now that he's mayor, so okay, give him the benefit of the doubt. And he talked a little bit about the crime, and he talked a little bit about the police officers and how hard they work, and he defended John Romero, which was really funny. The clip you don't get to hear tonight, but maybe we'll bring it in next week, was when he turned around and said, and I know, Chief Romero, you get blamed for everything, even a year ago when you had all the cops that you needed. Yeah, by the way, a year ago, it was Willie that was doing the criticizing of Chief Romero when he had all the cops that he needed. And he was doing so well, he seemed like he was going to get up there and he was going to defend the cops. He was going to defend the city, and then he was going to unveil his plan, or at least an outline of a plan, on how they were going to tackle the spike in crime since he laid off 25 cops and 25 firefighters. Instead, he started off really well, all the things that I just told you he said, and then he went back into campaign mode like it was a year ago and he was still running for the job and he was $24.5 million deficit, Mike Sullivan's fault, it's not my fault, people are blaming me for everything. So Giselle Silva banged her gavel and told him he was out of order and to please stick to the topic at hand, which is what we can do from here forward. And here's what happened.
I say community, if
we just
depend on the government to do it all, it's not going to happen. I'm a previous speaker, and even though I was not going to answer to the comments, but how can I lead a podium without doing that? I will not be with it. Yes, I've been as mayor.
As mayor.
I think, something like that. Was this mayor responsible for everybody who got shot and killed last year?
No. Nobody's saying that.
But this mayor responsible for 8 years of neglect on the city?
Can you pause that?
What?
Here's where he loses everybody. 8 years of neglect in the city. Mike Sullivan in 8 years never once laid off one police officer. In fact, under Mike Sullivan, the crime rate went down. The auto theft task force had caught so many people committing fraud, auto insurance fraud, that the state insurance went down. Your auto rates, if you live in Lawrence, now think about this. If you don't know anything about politics, you'll agree with this. In the last 5 years, your auto insurance in Lawrence went down. Nobody else in the world went down. Everything else went up. But in Lawrence, it went down because John Romero and the Auto Theft Task Force caught so many people committing auto fraud that it spread the word that Lawrence is no longer the place to commit auto insurance fraud. So for him to say that, am I responsible for 8 years of neglect in the city, that's just a lie. That's not a nuance. That's not political speak. When I was growing up, I was taught that's called a lie. Because Mike Sullivan never laid off a cop. Insurance rates went down. Crime went down. In the 9 months Willie Lantigua has become the mayor of Lawrence, there was a 400% increase in auto thefts. Which means, you know what, folks? You live in Lawrence? Next year, your auto insurance is going up. And the year after, and the year after. Because that's how they calculate your premiums. What neighborhood you live in, what's the crime, what's the auto theft rate, what's the fraud rate, and that's how they calculate it. Okay, let's finish him up.
This mayor is responsible for a $25 million deficit that created the fiasco we have today. The answer to that is no. Where were the people to be blamed? Where are they today? But I'm an easy target.
Do Can you pause that again? Here's where he loses everybody. Again, I'm the easy target. It's not my fault. The women who are sitting in the audience, folks, whose sons are dead, don't give a rat's ass whose fault it is. They don't. What they want is police officers to find the people who killed their children. That's what they want. They don't want to hear what he inherited. They don't want to hear what the deficit is. They don't want to hear Willie's campaign speech that's left over from last November. They want answers. And by the way, I can't believe I'm saying this. You're not going to believe I'm saying this. Hats off to Grisel Silva. Because in a second, she's going to stop him and tell him to stay on topic and talk about what we can do from here on in and not talk about political shenanigans. Let's roll that up, Timmy. I'm sorry, Tim.
I'm an easy target, but I'm ready to take it. And my commitment to the great city of Orange, and I was glad to hear one of the previous speakers calling the city a great city, because that's what it is, a great city. I'm committed to continue leading, not with a political torch in my hands like some will expect me to do as a politician, but with a good desire and good conscience to do what's right for the citizens of Lawrence. And I will not come before you to fill you with empty promises or tell you things that I cannot do. I will always come to you to tell you what I can do and what I'm willing to do.
Then tell us!
And that is to continue working hard for the protection of the citizens of Lawrence.
So that's the solution. You're going to work
Chief
hard.
Romero,
beautiful.
Chief Murphy and everybody else who's part of this team. The best witnesses as to the work I'm trying to do are sitting in front of me. Because I do consult with most of you the things that we need to do. And there are times when I have ideas. And you give me ideas. My idea, I put it to rest because your ideas sometimes are better. Sometimes we debate our idea. And I use mine if you agree that my idea is better. So regardless of all the rhetoric that I have here in previous days, and I don't mean rhetoric by the family members that were here, I repeat, my sympathy goes to them and to everybody who was outside. But the rhetoric that I read on the news on the paper about the mayor is not engaged. He's not coming in.
Mr. Mayor, I apologize for interruption. And I would like to make it clear. We need
to... You allow me to finish my remark, then you can make...
We need to... I carry in this meeting.
So, Mr.
Mayor, with all your respect, let's try to focus on the most important issue here tonight. And the most important issue here tonight is how we're going to be proactive on the wave of crime that are happening in the city. The people needed to know what is the administration and the city council members are taking.
Can you pause that? Can you pause it? Now, you hear the people clapping. And I was stunned, even though I knew this was not Willie's crowd. I was stunned. Because Grisel Silva, by the way, campaigned for and endorsed Willie Lantigua. Willie Lantigua, by the way, campaigned for and endorsed Grisel Silva. She's a member of the Willie Lantigua team. She's on the team. And she's made excuse after excuse for him. She made the motion to fire Mike Sweeney when Willie Lantigua came on board. And she voted to fire Miles Burke. And now she's at a public meeting telling the great Willie Lantigua, the great and powerful Oz, I'm sorry, but you're off topic. She had the nerve to say to Willie Lantigua, no. In 9 months, nobody has publicly said no to Willie Lantigua. And I'm not making that up. Google it and look for yourself. Nobody has said no to this guy in public ever in the 9 months he's been mayor. And now, one of his own, a member of his own team, and a Latino, by the way, so he can't cry racism, Grisel Silva? Like, who knew? She's gaveling him out of water. Now, did you say we have to take a break in 2 minutes? Can we keep this paused, take the break, and when we come back, you're going to hear Willie Lantigua screaming at the top of his lungs at his team member, Grisel Silva, and he starts yelling at her, what about when you got arrested? Ah, it's the best. Back after this, I'm paying attention. We're on. WHAV, we're catching the wave.
From Haverhill, and you are listening to the Paying Attention Show with Tom Duggan.
This is Willie Lantigua, and you are listening to the Paying Attention. Listen carefully, sir. Prestando Atención, the radio program with Tom Duggan, the chief.
Romania! Alright, I promised I wouldn't sing, but I love Grupo Mania. Someday I'm going to come in, I'm just going to play merengue. All flipping night. I'm eating peanuts, which is a bad idea when you're on the air. 978-374-1900 is the phone number here on WHAV if you'd like to get in on this. But before you call, we're going to get back to some of these clips of Willie Lantigua. Coming on! Oh, Mania!
Pequeña!
I love Elvis Crespo. By the way, I think the only openly gay Latino singer, like, ever. I'm pretty sure that the only openly gay singer is Elvis Crespo. Like, I couldn't care less, but I just thought it was kind of interesting. Because in the Latino culture, that's kind of like a real big taboo. So, all right. Let's pull the music down. Let's get back to the clips. Here on WHAV, we're catching the wave on WHAV.net, WHAV.TV, cable access on Andover, Haverhill, Methuen, Plastow, and Sandown. And if you're just recently joining us, we're talking about the Lawrence City Council of the Whole meeting on Monday night, where prior to the meeting there was a rally, there was a candlelight vigil for the victims of crime in the city of Lawrence. Many people showed up who had lost family members to home invasions and shootings and drug deals gone bad. And I think a lot of times we forget about the victims. These people showed up, they went to the candlelight vigil, and they went across the street to this meeting. Many of them got up and spoke. And then Willie Lantigua got up, and we heard up right before the break, Willie Lantigua started off pretty good. His heart went out to the victims. You know, he had the police there. He defended John Romero a little bit. And then he went into his same old tired speech about how it's not his fault and you know, it's Mike Sullivan's fault and there's political shenanigans and people are mean to me and people say bad things about me, but they're not really true. And Griselda Silva bangs the gavel. She's the chairman of this meeting because when there's a city council meeting of the whole, the vice president sits as the chairman of that meeting. So Griselle Silva, believe it or not, thanks to Willie and his buddies Frank Moran and Dan Rivera on the city council, made Griselle Silva the vice chairman of the city council. I warned Willie he was going to regret that, by the way. I bet you now he's regretting it. Because with Griselle Silva, she could be your best friend and defender today, but next week she's your worst enemy. And then you wait another week and she's your best friend again, and then a week later she's your worst enemy. So to have her in a permanent position like that, for Willie Lantigua, it showed he wasn't really quite as smart as I thought he was. So when last we left, on our last episode of Paying Attention, Griselle Silva was banging Willie Lantigua out of order and telling him, by the way, very respectfully, not something I've come to expect from Griselle Silva, but very respectfully saying, you're out of order, can we stick to the topic at hand of what we can do about the problem, not how we got here? Let's finish out this clip if we can, please.
To fix this problem, instead of waiting every weekend for a new shooting to happen. So this is what we need to focus. Let's stop focusing in this meeting here tonight on political shenanigans because we don't need that. We need to focus on the reason why we're conducting this meeting because we have professional people here from the state. And this is what is important right here right now. How are we going to address crime-related issues? That's what we want to hear. That's what the people at home wants to hear. Let's try to focus on that.
Let me know when I can proceed, Council City.
You could proceed, but let's focus on that.
Let me know when. You give me the
You could proceed.
I can proceed. Do you call this political shenanigans, what you said to Fox Television and other? What is this, Councilor Silva?
I will answer to you.
What is this?
I will tell you that. First of all, I don't tell you, Mr. Mayor, who do you allow to send a letter to? Even when your mother passed away, that you sent on your letterhead to million people's thank you letters for being there, using stamps from our city, and so forth, and send letters to whoever you want through your memorandum. You are a complete separate body from the city.
You pause that time?
You're the executive president.
So what she's talking about now is, Willie holds up a piece of paper that is a letter that Griselle Silva, City Councilor Griselle Silva, again, who knew? Who knew? I didn't know. She sent a letter to the Ethics Commission complaining that Willie Lantigua, when his mother died, when his mother passed away, he used city stationery and city stamps to send letters of thank you to all the people who attended his mother's funeral, his mother's wake. You know, when you go to a wake, you have to sign in. You get everybody's name and address afterwards. I know when my dad died, we did that. We get the book of everybody that came, and we sent them thank you letters. Of course, I didn't bill the taxpayers when my dad got killed. By the way, my dad got killed in the line of duty serving the city of Lawrence. My family didn't use city taxpayer money for letterhead and for envelopes and for stamps. But Willie Lantigua thought, well, he's Willie Lantigua. He can do what he wants. So he used city stationery and city envelopes, and you, the state taxpayers who pay the freight in Lawrence, you paid for the stamps to go on those envelopes to go out to people for Willie Lantigua to thank people for coming to his mother's wake and funeral. That's the letter that he's holding up in his hand because he's furious that somebody would actually, I don't know, hold him accountable. So he's holding this up saying, well, what about this letter that you wrote? By the way, anybody notice something about all this discussion? What we're not talking about during this discussion? Well, we're not talking about how to solve the crime problem, are we? During all of this discussion that's happening now with the mayor, chief executive officer of the city of Lawrence, there is no discussion at this point in time about how to fix the problem. How to give assistance to the people who have had sons murdered in front of them. How to give assistance to people who right now, as we're speaking on the radio, are calling 911 in the city of Lawrence because someone's trying to break into their house and rape their daughter or steal their goods or kill them. That's what Willie Lantigua has done to this meeting. This meeting began with victims of crime getting up and saying, the mayor has depleted the police department. We are begging him, we are begging you to please put the cops back because there are active and open murder investigations in the city, and they're not being tended to by the police because they don't have the manpower. This was not an attack on Willie Lantigua. This was an attack on the issue. And what Willie effectively did was he got up and he made it about him. And he made it about Griselle Silva writing a letter to the Ethics Commission, which nobody who lost a son sitting in the audience gives a rat's ass about. So he's holding up this letter and waving it, and she says, well, wait a minute. You did use city services when your mom got killed. When your mom died. She didn't get killed. When your mom died. You did use city services. And then it just degenerates from there.
We're the legislative branch. We're two different branches. You don't have the right to say to me who could I send a letter to address issues and concerns that our residents here of the city of Lawrence are telling me to do. So I don't tell you what to write and who to write to, and you don't tell me who to write to and who I send to. This is not a political advertisement to elect Councilor Silva, and that's not a letter to raise money for Councilor Silva. And I want to keep you that aware. So let's the subject of updating on the crime issues and what are we doing to be proactive. I think we should get back to a conversation.
Okay, can you pause that for a second?
I gave you an answer.
All right, so now we've gotten to the point where Griselle, she got taken off topic because it's very easy to do with her. She got taken off topic with Willie's shenanigans. And by the way, Willie's holding up that letter that she wrote to the Ethics Commission because Patrick Blanchett walked over and handed it to him. You can see it on camera if you watch the meeting on cable access. So, but she got off topic. She answered his question about the Ethics Commission letter. And then she says, look, let's get back to the topic at hand of how we can fix the problem. This is a whole different Griselle Silva than we've seen for the last 2 years. Because a year ago, Griselle Silva would have gone on for 40 minutes about this and never would have gone back on topic. But she has grown, I guess. She has grown. She has changed a little bit. And now she's saying, hey, look, you know what? Okay, I answered your question. You asked me the question about the letter I sent to the Ethics Commission. But now, can we get back on topic? I'm going to give you an opportunity, Mr. Mayor, to talk about what you can do about the problem. And he never does. Listen to what happens next.
Let's get back to the conversation. Let's get back to
it.
Let's get up.
For the record,
let's get back.
I sent you a letter.
Let's
sent
get
to my
back.
Office. You addressed the issue. I'm going to respond. Now, you like it or not?
Let's get back. Let's get back to topic.
You asked the question.
Mr. Mayor, let's get back to
you
topic.
You asked the question. I'll respond. When I'm asking your question,
Mr. LaPlante, what's your question at this moment?
I will respond when you answer. When I answer the question.
You're the author of, Mr. LaPlante, you're the author of this, and what is your question? We want to stay focused on the issue.
Thank you. I think out of courtesy to both our membership and to the mayor's office as well, I'm hopeful that the mayor can conclude his remarks. I know that there's been a lot of other side issues here, but if he can not necessarily address those through you and talk about the issues here that we all want to hear about, you sort of address them, maybe you can continue in that vein, I think that would be more productive, quite frankly. So
I agree with you, Council of Plan, except that the people are listening, and something was raised that I believe in the same forum that was raised, I need to answer that. As the mayor, and
already
members of this council, the member addressing the issue called the Ethic Committee. And as the mayor, I can send a thank you letter to those who express sympathy for my mom. Okay? And I take that personal. You bring it up to the discussion.
I
bring it when you got arrested. Talking about police power. I didn't bring that.
So he starts yelling. By the way, that laughter was me watching the meeting while I was taping it because I just couldn't believe what I was watching. He starts yelling, "You got arrested! You got arrested!" As if Griselle Silva is the crime problem in the city. He said, I'm gonna answer you whether you like it or not. Memo to Willie Lantigua. You might be the mayor of Lawrence. You are not the head of the city council. And your hack puppet, Frank Moran, is not running this meeting. Someone who's no longer apparently your puppet is running this meeting. And Griselle Silva has gaveled you out of order. And she has the legal authority to have the police have you removed if she wants. And you are lucky, Mr. Mayor. I know Griselle Silva. You are lucky she did not exercise that power Monday night. You are lucky. If Tom Duggan was a city councilor, if it was city councilor Tom Duggan chairing this meeting, you'd be getting dragged out in handcuffs for disrupting this meeting. The people who are sitting there who lost their sons to murder deserve more than you turning this into a political tete-a-tete over a letter that went to the Ethics Commission that has nothing to do with crime in the city. You want to know why Lawrence sucks? This is why Lawrence sucks. Because for 8 years you had somebody, you had city councilors and a mayor, pushing to make the city better. Trying not to lay off cops. Trying not to lay off firefighters. Willie Lantigua came in, claimed there was a $25 million deficit, borrowed $35 million so he didn't have to lay off cops and firefighters, got the money, blew the money, laid off 25 cops and 25 firefighters anyway, and as the result, we have mothers of murder victims crying at city council meetings, begging for police protection, begging for someone to bring to justice the people who murdered their children. And all Willie Lantigua can talk about is a letter that Griselle Silva sent to the Ethics Commission. Shameful, Mr. Mayor. Shameful. Another hour of paying attention coming up on WHAV. We are catching the wave.
Hey, gang, this is the Money Man, Eddie Money. Where's the party? Right here with my good buddy, Tom.
Tom Dugan. Where else? Meow.
One of the things that we have to do, especially at election time, is hold each candidate's feet to the fire and get them to commit before they get elected and then hold them responsible once they get in.
Absolutely. Pay attention. That's why I love the name of your program. Pay attention to who and what they are and what they represent. Never mind if they're white, if they're black, if they're Latin, or if they're conservative, if they're liberal. Listen to what they say and then vote.
Right.
Okay, Tommy.
All right. Thank you, Dave. (978) 374-1900 If you'd like to call in, this would be a good time. Final hour of the program. Here on WHAV, it's the Paying Attention Radio Program. And we love our new home here on WHAV. I'll be podcasting this program later on tonight. By the way, Tim, have we decided when the show is going to be rerun? Can we get that on Saturday morning? Is that possible, maybe?
Yeah, that's a possibility.
I'd love to have that. Saturday morning is great. And eventually I'd like to actually get in here on a Saturday morning and just start doing the live show on Saturday at some point. Probably like maybe after the first of the year when I've calmed down a little bit.
I'll give you the alarm code and the keys.
Sure.
I'll listen with my coffee at home.
That'd be great. Get Paul in here from Worcester. Man, my voice is shot. 978-374-1900 here on the Paying Attention Radio Program on WHAV. I want to thank Tim Coco, who's producing the show tonight because Paul couldn't be here. That's not going to happen again. It's not his fault. We moved the show from Wednesday to Thursday just this week. So the next show will be on Wednesday next week. And I will have the new Valley Patriot hopefully in my hands, and we'll be able to talk about some of the new news stories that we worked on. A lot of stories that got neglected because of the election. We're going to have some of that stuff in the new Valley Patriot. And by the way, when the paper comes out on Monday and Tuesday next week, the Valley Patriot will have an insert newspaper. You're going to get two newspapers for the price of one. And by the way, we're a free paper, so that's a pretty good deal. You're going to have the Valley Patriot and our new publication called Beyond the Badge, which is a brand new free publication that we started with the New England Police Benevolent Association, Jerry Flynn, and a number of guys, Tony Archinski, a number of guys down at the New England PBA in Chelmsford, which is where my new office is. And it's going to focus on police and crime issues. It's going to focus on correctional issues, jail issues, Supreme Court rulings about searches and seizures. I think when Jerry Flynn pitched this idea to me, I thought it was brilliant. And so we've been working on that all week while we're working on the Valley Patriot. So when you get your Valley Patriot, it's going to be doubly thick, but only this month, because the following month, Beyond the Badge is going to go standalone. Now, a lot of places where you can get the Valley Patriot, you will also be able to get Beyond the Badge, but we haven't really worked that out yet for December. So pay attention to this program. Stay tuned, and we will let you know exactly where those locations are going to be for Beyond the Badge. But we have 800 locations for the Valley Patriot, and I'd say at least half of them are probably going to be carrying Beyond the Badge.
So the paper in the WHAV lobby is the last edition?
Yeah, that's the October edition.
Okay.
And the November edition will be out. Normally, it's the first Wednesday of the month that the Valley Patriot comes out. It comes out on the first Wednesday of the month, unless there's a holiday or an election, and obviously that pushes it back a little bit. So we will be out on Monday or Tuesday, Monday and Tuesday. So some communities will get it on Monday night. Lawrence, North Andover, Methuen will get it Monday night. and Andover, Lowell, Haverhill, Newburyport, Salisbury, Groveland, Georgetown, Boxford, Chelmsford, Drakett, we'll all get them on Tuesday and Wednesday. So be on the lookout for the Valley Patriot. Of course, we always post it online within a day of it coming out. And unlike other newspapers, we post the PDF of the entire newspaper. So when you go to the Eagle Tribune website, a lot of times there are stories that were in the print edition that aren't online because they want you to go out and buy their newspaper. Why you would spend a dollar for the Eagle Tribune is beyond me.
Well, I don't know if you have any left-leaning listeners, but of course you're more green than most newspapers.
Yeah, by the way, the Valley Patriot, we are a very environmentally conscious newspaper. We are a very environmentally conscious organization. And I'm glad you brought that up, Tim, because I'm a Republican. We have four members of our board of directors. They're all Republicans. We are all conservatives. I'm not even going to tell you that I'm the most right-wing person on my board. I'm not. I'm like the second most right-wing person on my board. But I can tell you that if you go through our archives on valleypatriot.com and you go up to the top where it says newspaper archives and you start flipping through previous editions of the paper, there has been no other paper in the Merrimack Valley that has covered environmental disasters and environmental shenanigans in the Merrimack Valley than we have. Whether it was the raw sewage being pumped into the Shawshene River this past spring, which, by the way, I understand is still going on, whether it was the leaking toxic chemicals at the water treatment plant that we talked about a year ago September, where a city worker, a whistleblower, walked through the water treatment plant and saw literally barrels with leaking phosphorus foam, white phosphorus foam, leaking out of these barrels all over the floor. And you could see footprints where people who are city workers working at the water treatment plant were walking through this, breathing it in, getting it on their clothing. The Tribune didn't cover that. The left-wing newspaper pro-environmentalist groups didn't cover that. There were no websites of all of these left-wing environmental groups tackling this problem, demanding answers. When we covered the story about mercury, which the Trib, by the way, did cover, mercury being illegally stored at the water pumping station at the foot of Mount Vernon in Lawrence, I didn't see any of these supposedly environmental groups picking up this story, going out there and picketing, demanding answers from their legislators, demanding answers from the Lawrence City Council. But we covered it. We covered it because it's important. I'm an environmentalist who doesn't believe in global warming. I'm an environmentalist who believes that if you really care about the environment, you do something at the local level. Everybody who's listening to me, no matter what community you live in, you have an environmental problem in your community, I guarantee you. Somewhere in your community, there's a leaking toxic chemical somewhere. Somewhere in your community, there's raw sewage being pumped into a stream or a river. That's what environmentalism is all about. To me, anyway. I don't believe in global warming. I don't want cap and trade. I don't want the government to have some big, humongous global solution. I want people at the local level to handle the local environmental problems. Because if everybody in every community listening went out and did something about the problems, the environmental problems in their community, we wouldn't have a nationwide problem. A break already? Huh, what? Huh? Who? All right. Gonna take a quick break. We're gonna come back. We're waiting for Vincent A.J. Ericchetti. He is he's one of our deep throats who gets involved with a lot of political campaigns. He's gonna be calling in. When we come back, we're gonna talk about some of the local elections and what happened on Tuesday night. We're going to talk about the Paul Adams debacle. We're going to talk about the Al DiNuccio debacle, who had the nerve to send me a press release today. I looked at the press release. I couldn't believe it. I actually ended up speaking to him on the phone today. We're going to talk about that when we come back, because he has promised he's going to call in either tonight or next week. And he wants to, get this, this guy from Methuen wants to debate me about what's going on in Lawrence. 978-374-1900. Back after this on Paying Attention, Catching the Wave.
Here on the Paying Attention radio program, we're uniters, not dividers.
You know, it's time that these people get the hell out of this city. Each and every one of them.
Don't hold back.
Oh, I am sick of it.
For the
courts listening to Rick shoot his mouth off, not knowing what he's talking about.
Shoot my mouth off. I'm not. You're the one that's shooting off his mouth with lies. First of all. But took away the part that the kids are playing out in the street. And now you want to cut me off to protect this vermin?
The Paying Attention radio program, bringing peace and love to the Merrimack Valley.
You can hang up. You are a vermin.
(978) 374-1900 here on the Paying Attention radio program. Working up for the last 40 minutes of the program. Paula and Penny are at a wine tasting. I can't wait to find out how that went. That's going to be unbelievable. I'm not hanging around after the show tonight, Tim. Sorry. I'm bolting home. I'm dying to find out how that went. So the people of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, all over the country, chose new leaders. Countrywide, the nation went Republican. You can pod that down. The Republicans took over the House of Representatives, almost took over the Senate, and President Barack Obama held a press conference today. It seemed like a very different Barack Obama than we've seen for the last 2 years. It's always interesting. I'm not going to get off too much on the national stuff because we have other things to get to, but it's always interesting when any politician gets hit over the back of the head with a reality check and they don't know how to handle it because they believe their own rhetoric. Whether it's George Bush or Barack Obama, this is not party centric. This crosses both the aisles. When a politician, especially an incumbent politician, really believes their own rhetoric, and then suddenly the voters go to the polls and say, oh, no, you don't. They're always shocked, and especially this president, always seems perplexed when one of his ideas goes awry, when one of his grand schemes for fixing the world and ending homelessness and ending hunger and ending AIDS and ending everything in the world that he promised he was going to end when he ran for office, they're always stunned like a deer in headlights when it doesn't work out the way that they thought it was going to work out. And as a Republican, I'm happy that the Republicans took over, but here's why I'm a little unhappy about that. Because now the new Speaker of the House is John Boehner. John Boehner, you might as well have Nancy Pelosi. Yeah, he's fiscally conservative, but John Boehner is an open borders.
He cries.
He does cry, that's true, just like Nancy Pelosi, except his makeup doesn't run. And the Botox doesn't shoot out of his chin. But John Boehner is an open borders guy. He does not only does he want open borders, he doesn't want to deport illegal aliens. He wants to continue giving federal services to illegal aliens and does not want to stop Al-Qaeda from coming across the border. You don't believe me? Jump on my Facebook page and look at the story that I posted yesterday or the day before about John Boehner. You know, people who are special like me who are Republicans think if we just got our party in, they're going to take care of the main issues, the major issues that we think are important that the other party's not taking care of. And by the way, I think that's one of the reasons why so many Democrats and liberals are disenfranchised right now with Barack Obama. They're disenchanted with Barack Obama because they really thought he was going to end hunger. They thought he was going to end homelessness. They really thought that Barack Obama was going to come in, and within the first 2 years, it was going to be like morning in America. There were going to be rainbows over everybody's homes. The streets were going to be paved with gold. There was going to be no more crime in America. And when reality set in, they realized that that just wasn't going to happen. Not in the first 2 years, not in the second 2 years, not if he gets another term. Now I'm on the other end of that. I'm a Republican. And I was thrilled that the Republicans took over the House because it means more fiscal responsibility. The president will not be able to spend money like a drunken sailor anymore, we hope. But what we don't have is a Speaker of the House, a leader in the House, who's going to stop illegal immigration. We don't have somebody who's the leader in the House. And by the way, the leader sets the agenda and sets the tone for the House of Representatives, for Congress. He sets the tone. We do not have a guy who wants to build what I want, which is a wall and a moat, an electric fence, crocodiles in the moat, men eating dogs on the other side of the fence, and when we catch illegal aliens, to throw them over the fence, back into Mexico, or send them back wherever they came from, and have American tax money go for American taxpayers. Have American services from the American government go to pay for Americans first. Then if you got money left over, you want to send money to Turkey? You want to send money to Africa for AIDS treatments, medicines to other countries? You want to go help Haiti? I'm all for it. Once you've taken care of the priority, which is the people paying the bills. If your daughter or your son has cancer and you need all of the money that you make and your wife makes to pay for that cancer treatment, you're not going next door and paying for someone else's operation. You take care of your own first. We don't have that with John Boehner. And maybe he'll grow into the position. Maybe he will change as time goes on. Maybe he will become more right-wing on the illegal immigration issue. But I'm not holding my breath. We saw George Bush, who did absolutely nothing about illegal immigration. We saw George Bush's father do nothing about illegal immigration. We saw Democrat Bill Clinton do nothing about deporting illegal aliens, stopping them from getting government services, putting up a wall, stopping them from coming here. Now, this has nothing to do with race. I know that the other side on this issue, the people who respectfully and sometimes disrespectfully disagree with me on this issue, want to make this a race issue, because then they're doing what Willie Lantigua did in those clips that we played last hour. Then you're talking about racism and you're not talking about immigration. It's a complete distraction from the issue. But I don't care. I'm Irish. I don't care. If we've got illegal immigrants from Ireland, and by the way, we do, we have a large illegal immigration problem in South Boston from Ireland. I'm sorry, but you've got to go home. Americans should determine, and only Americans should determine, who comes here, who stays here, and under what conditions that happens. What we have now is an open border. Anybody can come here. And once they step foot on American soil, you would think if we caught them, we could put them on a bus, drive them back over the border, and drop them off. Well, first of all, if we did that, they'd just walk across the border again because there's nothing to stop them. Millions of Muslims are trying to murder us and destroy our cities and kill our families, and we have an open border between us and Canada and us and Mexico. Oh, we have a caller. Okay. We're going to hit drop, and then we're going to take the caller. You are live on the Paying Attention Radio program. Thank you for calling. Are you live on the Paying Attention Radio program? You could be. Maybe this is Vincent A.J. Ericchetti. Yes, are you on the air? Hello?
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Hi, Tommy.
Yes.
Al DiNuccio, how are you?
Al DiNuccio. Well, I'm glad that you called in, Al DiNuccio, because we were going to get to you in the last half hour of the show, but we can start it now. And hopefully I can hold you over for the break. Al DiNuccio, for those who don't know, was a candidate on Tuesday night for state representative. He challenged Linda Dean Campbell. There were two other candidates in that race. Al was the Republican, which is kind of surprising to me, given some of the things I've heard him say. Al, do you want to start this little tete-a-tete, or should I?
It doesn't matter. I mean, we could talk about what you think happened statewide. We could talk about my election. I mean, it's your show. We could do it any way you want.
I'd really rather just beat you up. Can I do that?
You know, I got thick skin.
We'll see after this interview. If you listened to last week's program, you know that my animosity toward Al DiNuccio's campaign, not personally, because he is a personable guy, but toward his campaign it was pretty high strung. Because during a debate during the campaign, Al DiNuccio said that, he thinks Willie Lantigua was doing a good job, and Lawrence doesn't really have that much of a crime problem, and they're doing good. They're functioning, and I would have supported the $35 million,
and I don't
support receivership. You did say you don't support receivership for Lawrence, right?
That's correct. Okay. I didn't say anything about Willie Lantigua specifically. I did say I did I did say in all my debates and all along my campaign that I do not believe that Lawrence should be gone, should go into receivership. That's correct.
Now, tell me why. And by the way, we are going to have a break in about 2 minutes. Hopefully you can hold on so I can beat you up more.
Yeah,
but tell the people why you think that Lawrence should not be put into state receivership.
Well, number there's several reasons, but you know we could get into this if you want. I thought we were going to do something like this next week, but you know the main reason about receivership in Lawrence is they just got $30-some-odd million. They do have somebody overseeing that money. Going into receivership in any city, not just Lawrence, in any city, costs all the taxpayers a lot of money. They're going to come in, the state's going to come in, and they're going to shut down the city. That right there stops all the progress in the city. Right now, you got a lot of jobs being created in Lawrence. A ton of jobs being created.
Where?
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Have you been to Sal's Pizza? Have you been to Riverwalk? Have you been to Pawtucket Medical? Have you been to New Balance? Have you been to the new immigration building? Have you been to Levi's building? It's everywhere. The city of Lawrence, jobs-wise, is booming. Not only is it booming on a big scale like that, actually One Mill Street has just been taken over. They're going to start renovating that. The Northern Essex Community College has bought the in-town mall. They're going to be expanding in there. Northern Essex Community College is expanding in the Riverwalk complex. I mean, jobs are being created in Lawrence more so than any other city in the Commonwealth, in my opinion.
Well, let me just take you to task on that. First of all, you say if the city goes into receivership, it's going to cost the taxpayers a lot of money.
Sure.
Right now, the taxpayers are paying 100% of the schools and 80% of the city budget, plus another $35 million that Willie borrowed.
They always have, though. Tom, they always have. That's not new.
That's correct. So we're already paying.
That's going on forever.
My point is that we're already paying the freight in Lawrence. If it went into receivership, it wouldn't cost us more money. It would actually cost us less money. But let me get to the Sal's thing. Sal Lapoli has been creating jobs for the last 6 years, 5-6 years in Lawrence.
And he continues to.
he continues to. But that's not the city government. The city government isn't creating jobs. The city council's not creating jobs. Willie Lantigua's not creating jobs.
We're talking about receivership, and receivership stops that. What receivership does is they come in and they shut down the city. And then they have to go through all the books, and they're going to go through all the permits.
That's just not true.
It is true. They have to take an audit. They got to audit everything. They got to see where they stand.
But it's what's not
any business.
What's not true is that they don't shut down the city, and they don't stop Sal Lapoli from hiring anybody. I own the Valley Patriot. If North Andover got taken over by the state tomorrow, I could still hire whoever I want.
Yes, you can, but it stops the progress. It stops construction. It stops permits. It stops a lot of things. Right now in the city of Lawrence, you have probably, and you know, you've been around Lawrence, you know Lawrence pretty good. Let's be honest here. You probably have more minority-owned businesses in the city of Lawrence than in the history of the city, going all the way back when the Italians and the Irish were the immigrants there. You have barbershops, you have grocery stores, you have the beauty stores, you got auto body shops, you got mechanics, you got all this stuff, minority-owned. They're booming. They're popping up every single day in the city of Lawrence. These are all new businesses that all have to get permits, that all have to go through the health department. All this stuff stops when you start receivership. Progress stops. Not only does it stop, the whole state has to come in and run the city. Well, you know, Lawrence is not the only city in trouble, Tom.
Chelsea and Springfield had receivership or a control board.
And Chelsea was 20 years ago.
Right, but they had a receivership or a control board, and the city was not shut down. The city did the small businesses did not stop creating jobs.
And they're in the same shape as Lawrence is today.
That's
the
correct.
The state is still paying for all their schools. The state's still paying for everything else. It's the nature of that city. You know, you got Worcester, you got Springfield, you got Holyoke, you got Chelsea, you got all these cities. Let me tell you something. There's a lot more cities. You think this is bad this year? Watch next year. You got, 100,000 people a week coming off of unemployment right now with no jobs?
Right.
You think this is bad now? Watch what happens next year. Every city and town's in trouble next year. All the cops and firemen and teachers are getting laid off next year in all the cities. There's no money, Tom.
So now you're making
my... put everybody in receivership?
But now you're making my point.
Well, you can't put everybody in receivership.
But now
what
you're making...
What we have to do is recreate... We're not recreate. We need to rethink how we run things.
Yeah. But now you're making my point, Al, because...
How do you figure?
Here's how I figure it. If Willie borrowed $35 million to pay off last year's bills,
yep.
A, if they're going to cut more of our local aid next year and there's going to be higher unemployment next year and more cities are going to need more money next
correct.
Year, yep. How is he going to start paying that back? the prior year, supposedly prior year bills. What happens next year when he goes to the legislature and says, I need to borrow another $35 million or $50 million or $100 million?
If you let the city play out and you let Sal and all these developers keep doing what they're doing, they're going to get more money. They're going to bring in more revenue. They're going to collect more tax dollars. Lawrence, in the very near future, is going to be collecting more tax dollars than they ever did before.
I will agree with you on one thing as we go to break, and hopefully you can hold on. I will agree with you on one thing, and I don't ever want to give people the impression that that there's nothing good going on in Lawrence, because you are right about that. There are a lot of very good people, and especially Latinos, who have come to this country and started their own business. They're working 100 hours a week to make their pizza shops or their barber shops or whatever it is move
that.
Forward. And you're right about that.
Maybe I've
neglected that part of the equation, but that doesn't negate the fact that the city council cannot get it done, that the mayor and his team cannot get it done. They still, even now we're in November, he took office in January, he still hasn't hired a budget director for the city of Lawrence. A budget director with a $35 million loan hanging over their head, with a budget that laid off 24 cops and 25 firefighters or vice versa, and he still hasn't even hired a budget director? We'll talk about the... You can hang on for the break?
I will, absolutely.
All right. Back after this, we get Al DiNuccio on the line, who said during the campaign, basically, Willie's doing a good job. Like, not by name, but that's what he said. He said that, and he's against receivership, and Willie Lantigua helped him on his campaign, as did Lenny Degnan, and we're going to beat him up for it when he comes back, because he deserves it, Al DiNuccio.
You are the king, son.
Call yourself a Republican. Shame.
This is Willie Lantigua, and you are listening to the Paying Attention. Listen carefully, sir. Prestando Atención, the radio program with Thomas Dugan, the chief.
He carried a gun for good to protect the rest of us. You carried a gun because you were street terrorists, and that's what you are. It is incumbent upon the court to impose the sentence of death. That is all. Take him away.
This is the Paying Attention radio program.
All right, we're back here on WHAV, and on the line we still have former candidate for state representative, and by the way, a guy who almost beat Billy Manzi in the last mayor's race in Methuen. Very close race, and I think had he actually bothered to show up at the debate that he committed to on this program, he might have actually gotten enough votes to win, but he bailed on us then. And now after his second election, now finally he decides to call into the program. And he wants to take me to task because he wants to defend his buddy Willie Lantigua. So we're going to let him do that.
Well, wait a second. Can we switch gears?
Sure.
Can we talk about the election a little bit?
Sure.
And then maybe we'll go back to that after.
All right.
But let's talk about the election, because I have a little bit of a theory on what went wrong.
You got help from Willie Lantigua and people found out.
Well, hold on now. Now, my theory here is, you know, the Republicans did have a good plan. We're all working together, Charlie Baker, myself, Golnick, a lot of congressional and local races. And for the first time ever, the National Republican Committee had an office in Massachusetts. Never happened before. It was always written off as a blue state, and Scott Brown kind of changed that. So the Republicans were banded together, and we supposedly have this big Republican tidal wave. And we're all banking on that. What happened, though, I think, is that Charlie Baker made the crucial mistake of saying he was going to fire 5,000 government employees.
I agree with that.
And what happened there was, if you think about it, Tommy, there's a lot of people that are employed by the government. If you think of all the state workers and all the policemen and firemen and teachers all across the state, and DPW workers and city hall workers, and anyone that takes a city or state check, there's a lot of them. There's probably more of them than the private sector, if you think about it.
Right.
Well, when Charlie Baker said that, everyone went, oh, my God, I might be getting laid off.
Yep. Yeah, he energized
a lot of us down.
He energized, I think, at that point, he energized Deval Patrick's base.
I believe he did. I believe that's where that was the tipping point. A lot of these people woke up that may have been leaning Republican, may have been leaning, you know, a little to the middle, and you know, because that national wave was definitely hitting Massachusetts. And Charlie Baker just said, you know, he woke them. I know a guy, and this is true. I know a guy who works for the state. His wife works in Lawrence as a school teacher. His daughter works in Lawrence as a school teacher. And he has another daughter in school becoming a school teacher. Four people in their family, they're all going to be on, you know, some sort of state or government payroll or city payroll. He instructed his whole family to vote for Deval.
Wow.
To vote Democrat.
Wow.
And they did. I know they did.
Well, listen, can you call
and
in?
I don't blame them.
You know what? In a way, I don't blame them either, except that, you know, when you vote selfishly for your own job and not thinking about what's better for everyone else, not thinking about what's better for society, I think that's kind of selfish.
Well, to a certain extent, you're right. But if you think about, you know, paying your mortgage, putting your kids through college, putting food on the table, that's got to come first when you're in these economic hard times. It's not like you could just jump to another job.
Right. No,
you know,
you're
jobs
right.
Are scarce, and they're you know, when you know, to be gainfully employed right now is really big. Okay, there's a lot of people. I talked to a guy, you know, I met a lot of people on the campaign trail, and this one gentleman, my heart bled for the guy. He's 57 years old. He was one of those what you call 99ers. He collected 99 weeks of unemployment, and he's done. Came off of unemployment, had hundreds of resumes out there with nothing, no leads. And he said to me, he goes, I have zero income right now, zero. He goes, I'm going to lose my house very soon, and I don't know what I'm going to do. He applied for food stamps. He got it. And he applied for MassHealth, and he's in the process of getting that. But he's going to lose his house, and he has no job.
Wow.
What happens to these people?
Well, I hate to sound cold, but not our problem.
Oh, it is. It's
not the government's problem. You know what happens when people get out of work, when a big factory closes and a whole bunch of people get out of work? What happens is people become innovative. They go out and they start their own business. They start their own knitting business. They start their own pizza places.
You're right. That's how there's a lot of landscapers out there.
Right.
A lot of people starting up their own little business.
But when the government intervenes and says, we'll pay you to stay home, guess what doesn't happen? Those pizza shops don't open up. People don't become innovative. When they say you can stay on unemployment for 99 weeks? What? You mean I can stay home and not work and get paid instead of going out and doing something because I have to and starting a business or doing a job that's not my ideal job, but I'm doing it because I have to put food on the table, which then might lead to my dream job?
Well, you know, one of my ideas was, and I mentioned this in a debate, I call it a foot in the door program. And, you know, if you're collecting unemployment right now, in the last 6 months of your unemployment, what my idea was, if you're collecting unemployment, the government will get you a job with me, with my company, we'll say.
Okay.
And they're going to pay your salary. The government will pay your whole salary. They will pay your workers' comp, and they'll pay your health insurance to work for me for free. I don't pay a penny.
Wow.
This is a plan I had.
The government was going to pay them to work for you?
For 6 months.
Wow, that's a pretty good deal for you.
Well, hold on a second.
Are you sure you're a Republican?
Listen to the plan. Now, this is the last 6 months of your unemployment, though. So you're already getting paid to stay home.
I understand what you're saying.
Okay, so now you're coming to work for me instead of sitting at home, like you said, doing nothing, playing video games or whatever.
Right.
You're in. It's a foot in the door. What it is now, I got a guy for free. How can I say no as an employer? Any employer is going to take a free guy.
Right.
I was like, so now you're in my building. You're there for 6 months. I kind of bond with you. You're a good guy. You're a good employee. After 6 months, when your unemployment runs out and the state stops giving you to me for free, I may keep you.
Right.
I may keep you on now. Your foot's in the door. You're getting up every morning. You're going to work. You're buying lunch. You're productive.
Listen, I hate to do this, but can you call in next week? I'd love to continue this discussion with you.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. All right. And by the way, tell Lenny it didn't work.
You're good.
I am good.
You are good, and you are the king.
Thank you. I will talk to
you soon, and thank you for the opportunity.
All right, thank you very much. We got Vincent AJ Ericardi on the line. We're going to get to him after the break. I got an email from Al DiNuccio today, and it was this press release asking me if I'd put this like free thing in the paper. First of all, he didn't come on the debate when he ran against Manzi. Then he didn't come on my show during this election. He didn't buy one ad either election, and then he has the nerve to send me a press release asking me to put in something for free. I was like, I got to call this guy on the phone. This guy's got a lot of nerve. Oh, you're still there? Crap.
I'm still here.
I thought you were gone.
I'll talk to you next week.
All right. Thank you, Al.
Bye.
Al DiNuccio, a guy who calls himself a Republican and defends Willie Lantigua and says Lawrence should not be in receivership. I don't know where he gets the idea. Probably from Lenny Degnan. Probably from Lenny Dykstra. I don't know where he gets the idea that if Lawrence goes into receivership, the city shuts down and Sal Lapoli can't hire any waiters for his for Salvatore's restaurant. I don't know where he gets that. But we're going to have him on again next week, and if he will allow it, I'd love to have him on every week. He's a guy who ran for mayor in Methuen. He ran for state rep in Methuen. He got slotted by Linda Campbell, and he can deny it. But I honestly believe that when he defended Willie Lantigua and said Lawrence should not go into receivership and said all these great things are happening in Lawrence and that they're functioning and everything's going well, I think that was the end of his campaign. I think had he gone the other route, he probably at least could have closed that gap, made it close enough that he could have pushed it over the edge on Election Day. I know he denies that. Now, he doesn't believe that that's true, but I do. You make up your own mind. Vincent A.J. Ericchetti, when we come back, he is a political consultant, and he knows lots of stuff about this election. And then we're going to end the show at 9 o'clock. How about that? Here on the Paying Attention Radio program, Catching the Wave.
I'm Gretchen Putnam, managing editor of the Eagle Tribune, and you shouldn't be listening to Paying Attention.
Sounds like a lot of people are paying attention. You know, I can only imagine that if you use your imagination, this must be what it was like for people behind the Iron Curtain in the 50s would pick that certain time of the week to tune in their radio and listen to Radio Free Europe. Because this is Radio Free Lawrence, beaming through with all the news that you never hear in the other media outlets.
Don't be trite. Real name, no gimmick.
Two trailer park girls go around the outside.
Nine seven eight 374-1900. Let's pod that music down quick because we've got 10 minutes left in the program. Vincent A.J. Ericchetti is on the line. Are you there, Vincent?
I am here.
Now, Vince, you are a political consultant. You're one of our deep throats during election time that lets us know everything that's going on. What do you think about the results on Tuesday? And did you hear my rant about John Boehner?
I missed the rant on Boehner, but... Do you mean locally or nationally? What do I think of?
Well, let's just stick to Massachusetts because we've only got 10 minutes left, and maybe we can get you onto another program to talk about the national stuff.
Well, one of the things I thought was most interesting was the fact that the Democrats upped their game. We saw about 100,000 extra votes between this election, more than the Scott Brown election, and the Democrats did their job with get out the vote efforts, and a large part of their statewide victories were due to that. Although at the state rep level, one of the stories that's really going unnoticed is a lot of these Republican state rep candidates really cleaned up. I believe there are 22 new Republican state reps coming in, and that puts the Republican caucus in the state house at roughly 32 members, depending on a few recounts that are
now,
occurring.
Now, is that 32 out of how much? How
That's
many?
32 out of 160.
So that so even though we're all celebrating that we got 32 Republican members, which is more than we probably had in a long time, we're still far in the minority.
Oh, of course, but I mean, the important thing to remember is, we started this year with 16 Republican state reps.
Right.
We're going to start January with 32.
So do you think that this is a rebuilding year? I've been talking to Paula a lot about this, and, I was very down after the election. I think the day after the election I was very down. By the way, is that Karen Polito's dog?
No, that's my dog. He protects me from everyone, including children and
Democrats.
Single old ladies that live in my condo unit.
Right. So I was very down the day after the election. I was looking nationwide, and I was pretty happy that at least Barack Obama has some kind of check and balance on his runaway spending, although Republicans have not really had a great record on that. Hopefully they've learned their lesson. But I looked locally, and I said, we got Jim Lyons, and we got Paul Adams, and we got a whole bunch of new Republicans at the state level. But then I looked at the numbers, 160 with 32 Republicans, not really much to celebrate. And Deval Patrick for four more years, that means four more more years of trying to put transponders in our cars so the government knows where we are all the time, and more taxes on candy and toothpaste and anything else that he can raise money on. The short-sighted financial ideology of Deval Patrick, and it just made me really depressed. And Paula's take was that, and it sounds like what you're saying, which is what I'm building up to, is that this was a rebuilding year, that we had some gains, and we ought to build on that success and work on for the next 2 years. And I really want to believe that, but I think I'm still pretty down about it.
Well, think of it this way. Candidates, I don't know the number of Republican state reps that beat incumbent Democrats, but there were a good number of them. I had about three or four who were my clients, and that is going to scare a lot of Democrats from voting blindly with Deval Patrick, giving him, you know, a new tax on candy. I mean, we also saw that the alcohol tax got repealed because it was a double tax.
Right.
A lot of times people didn't know that was a double tax. When people are like, oh, tax alcohol? Well, I don't drink. It doesn't matter. It's like, no, guy. That's a double tax,
right.
And that's hurting border liquor stores. And, you know, one even went out of business, and the owner put up a sign that said, vote yes on one so I can reopen.
Right.
You know, it started to touch people beyond just, you know, the tax, what the attacks affected. But the other angle of it is this. Every single state rep that was a Democrat that lost their reelection, people like Barbara Letalian, who was the ranking member on Ways and Means, that's going to open eyes for all the Democrats in the legislature. They're not going to blindly vote with leadership just because.
Oh, I really want to believe you.
Well, the only way it's going to happen is if people like you and other talk radio hosts and members of the media talk about the fact that Republicans did make gains this year in
right.
Massachusetts. You know, Charlie Baker's campaign, you know, Charlie Baker lost not because of the election or because of the people. He lost because he had a horrible campaign. And I'm sorry. I know a lot of Republicans don't want to hear this or say it, but while Deval Patrick was running education ads on Dancing with the Stars for the last 2 months,
mm-hmm.
Charlie Baker wasn't running any ads on that show.
Now that,
and, you know, those are the types of things that swing elections, not who's the better candidate.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up, because one of the things that I was talking to with my good friend Jack Roy here in Haverhill, who's a very good friend of mine, is that, you know, Deval Patrick was taking advantage of pop media. Like you said, Dancing with the Stars. But he was also, you know, while the Republicans were looking Republican and looking official and sounding official, which to the average voter means boring, Deval Patrick and the Democrats were on Kiss 108.
Yep.
They were running commercials on the E channel and on Oprah's channel.
If I can give another example.
Sure.
You know, everyone talked about Charlie Baker was losing women because he wasn't advertising where women watch on the top five shows that women were watching. You know, I forced myself over the last 2 months of the campaign to watch. And I couldn't find any of his ads. You know,
right.
I'd leave it on. I'd leave the TV on while I was working, and I never heard, never saw nothing. He went on the Mix station, which dominates women in the morning, the day before the election. He was never on it before.
Right.
The other side of this is he focused so much on Tim Cahill, who he should have ignored, because Tim Cahill, they dropped him down to 8% in September. And then they're like, well, we need him to get to 3%. Well, he's the incumbent treasurer and a former city councilor from Quincy forever and a former county treasurer. 8% is where he's
going
to stay.
Right, yeah. He's never going anywhere under 6 or 7.
Exactly.
Six or five,
yeah. I mean, if Christy Myhouse got 6%, then Cahill's home is probably 8. And instead of ignoring Cahill and focusing on Deval Patrick, they stuck with this ridiculous, constantly attack Cahill further. And, you know, one of the first debates after the primary, I texted Charlie Baker and a few people that I know work for the campaign, and I said, you have to do the following. The first chance you get to question Deval Patrick, you have to say, my next question is for Governor Dukakis, I mean Patrick, because that
Brilliant.
Would have set the tone for
right.
the rest of the campaign, Everyone in the media would have talked about it. It would have been the first thing reported on in the paper.
Yeah.
It would have had a funny headline in the Herald. You know, go back. Look at the Boston Herald's front page. You do not, you see maybe one or two negative pages, negative front pages against Deval Patrick during the campaign.
Yeah.
All the rest is Cahill, 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 Baker, Cahill, Cahill, Cahill.
Right.
I don't know who, you know, it really frustrates me as someone who works on this and spends years studying this stuff and see a great opportunity screwed up. I don't want to blame the voters of Massachusetts. I don't think they were given a choice because it was such a horrible campaign.
See, I disagree. I think it was a good campaign. I think they made one or two very key mistakes. And I do blame the voters of Massachusetts because they looked at a current governor who doubled the unemployment in the 4 years when he promised he was going to take care of unemployment. A governor who promises 1,000 more cops on the streets, and they're on the streets all right, but they're holding a sign that says, we'll work for food.
And how many times did Charlie Baker's campaign remind people of this?
You're right. And I think one of the key mistakes that he made, I sent a text to one of his campaign people the night of the last debate that they had, what they called a debate. It was really like, I don't know, a bunch of kids sitting around a high school guidance counselor's office on Channel 7. And I texted one of his campaign people and said, I certainly hope Lawrence is on his agenda for something to discuss tonight in this final debate. And the text that I got back was no. And I don't know if he was afraid. I don't know if he was just getting bad advice from somebody. But when he came to North Andover and he talked about Lawrence, look at the North Andover numbers. He won almost 2-1. When he went into Methuen, when he went into Haverhill, when he went into Dracut, when he went into Tewksbury, and he talked about Lawrence, the numbers spiked because it's something right next door. It's something everybody can relate to, and everybody knows at least that there are shenanigans, if they don't know specifically what those shenanigans are, in Lawrence. And yet, at the last week and a half of the campaign, suddenly Lawrence was off the table. And I think that was a home run for him, and he didn't do it.
It's also a matter of, you know, he didn't, you know, to say he ran a horrible campaign is not, you know, I say that to simplify it. I mean, the fact is, he had a death by 1,000 paper cuts.
Yeah, he did.
1,000 little things that were really bad, and they all added up. You know, not advertising to, you know, he lost women. Some polls say he lost women between 12% and 14%. Because he didn't advertise to them.
Right.
That's a little mistake, but it adds up. He talked about slashing, and he talked about laying off public employees. Do you know how many people that scared that would probably have voted for him? You know, that's another little thing that added up. He did a freaking press conference in front of the State House 30 times and was shocked that no one reported it because there was no news to it. You know,
right.
He was releasing a policy memo with a big sign. That's it.
If we have about a minute and a half left, if Charlie Baker had picked a Bruce Tarr or a Steve Bador to be his running mate, would it have made a difference?
I don't think so.
So we really can't blame Richard DeSay on this at all, can we?
I would never blame Richard DeSay. I'd never blame the lieutenant governor. You know, the saying goes, you always want to pick a lieutenant governor candidate who isn't going to hurt you and is going to help you with the base.
Well, the reason I'm asking, Vince, is because Mitt Romney had a woman on the ticket. And I think if Charlie Baker had a woman on the ticket and he had brought in Steve Bador or Bruce Tarr, that I think that would have made the difference, don't you think?
Not a 7% difference.
No.
You know, you still got to run a good campaign. People vote for the top of the ticket. What you want people to say is their lieutenant governor pick is so good they could be governor. That's the only thing you want said.
Right.
And there aren't that many people out there like that. I mean, for crying out loud, 10 months ago, Charlie Baker was ready to have Scott Brown as a lieutenant governor candidate, and Scott Brown won, and then, you know, that kind of threw it off.
Right.
And
30 seconds.
You know, his second choice was probably someone like District Attorney Tim Cruz down from Plymouth County, but he had a re-election.
Right.
And then, you know, Essex County Sheriff Frank Cousins was probably on the short list, but he had a re-election.
That would have been a disaster.
But the point is, they, you know, there's such a small pool to pick from that Tessay was a good choice.
Yeah, I agree.
It wasn't great. It didn't excite people, but it was good.
Well, I'm going to let you go. because we have less than 30 seconds left to go. I appreciate you calling. Can we get you to call in next week?
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you, Vince.
Have
Vincent,
a good night.
Thank you, Vincent, AJ, Eric Eddie. I actually think if Richard Tessay was the guy at the top of the ticket, and I actually told this to Charlie Baker when I was interviewing him. I actually said this to him, and it made him really upset. But if Richard Tessay was the Republican nominee and Charlie Baker was the lieutenant governor nominee, I think Richard would have won. In fact, I would have voted for him. I voted for them anyway, but I definitely would have voted for him if it was Richard. Thank you very much. We got about, what, 30 seconds left, or are we well over? All right. We're ending the second Paying Attention radio program here on WHAV. Next week, we will be back on Wednesday night, so that will be our regular night. Hopefully, Tim is going to be able to rebroadcast this on Saturday morning at some point. You will be able to listen to this on WHAV.net, WHAV.TV. You can listen, by the way, on a mobile app on your cell phone, if you'd like, which is kind of pretty interesting. And we're also on Andover Channel 8, Haverhill Channel 22. We're in Methuen on Comcast Channel 8 and 22, and on Verizon, I can't read that, Channel 32. In Plastow, hi, Becky. We are, Becky's my sister. She's listening on Plastow Cable Access Channel 17 and on Sandown, New Hampshire Channel 17. And I'm working very hard to try and get us on Drake It Cable Access. I'm actually going to make some phone calls next week after the paper comes out to make that happen. Thank you so much for listening. If you're listening live, if you're listening on the internet, on the podcast, thank you for listening. Shoot an email to Tim Coco at, what is it, Tim at WHAV.net?
TCoco at WHAV.net.
Shoot him an email and let him know that you really can't stand the fact that I'm here. If you don't like me, if you do like me, let him know that you like me. I don't care one way or the other, but he wants some feedback. So let him know what you think about the Paying Attention radio program coming to WHAV. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Do we have the close of the show? Do you got some music going out? There it is. This is Melvin Taylor from right here in Lowell. Oh, we're not in Lowell. We're in Haverhill. From right over there in Haverhill. In Lowell. I don't even know where I am anymore. Crap. This is a song that he wrote for the Worthen House, which is a bar in Lowell that I actually have spent an awful lot of time drinking at in my younger days at UMass Lowell. And next week we're going to have all kinds of guests. We'll have a lot more clips. The Valley Patriot will be out on Monday and Tuesday. Beyond the Badge will be out on Monday and Tuesday. Thank you for listening. Good night.
Paying Attention again next Wednesday night at 6. The opinions expressed on Paying Attention are not necessarily those of WHAV, its sponsors, or affiliated stations. Paying Attention came to you from the Edwin B. Johnson Newsroom.
It's 9:02.